Our Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Move over, Dr. Atkins. A growing number of Americans are trading in their protein shakes and T-bone steaks for a strict diet of almost nothing. The new buzz in food is fasting. From spiritual seekers to those looking for a full-body detox or just a slimmer waist, more Americans are shunning solid food for a day, a week, or sometimes a month at a time. Tonight on Point, the new American abstinence, fasting in the fast food nation. But first, it was a red ink day in Washington. The Congressional Budget Office forecast a federal budget deficit of $480 billion in 2004 and a cumulative deficit of almost $1.4 trillion over the next decade. Gail Shattuck covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor and has been reporting on the stunning numbers. I asked her what pushed the deficit projections so high from much lower estimates only a few months ago.
Well, it's related to really three things. One is the cost of the war, cost of homeland security, that accounts for about a third of the deterioration. Another hefty third, like 36%, has to do with the tax cuts, shortfalls on the revenue side. And the experts I'm talking to say that another small third has to do with the fact that the projections initially about the surpluses to come were overly optimistic.
So between security, war, tax cuts, and rose-colored glasses only
That's
a few
right.
months ago. So where does this leave us now exactly, Gail? What exactly is the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, projecting?
We're walking into a deficit this year, they say, of about $401 billion. That's not going to fade away as the economy recovers, because their estimates are building in some thought that that will happen. They're looking, even with recovery, at another record $480 billion deficit next year. That is fiscal year 2004.
Almost half a trillion dollars, and that is, as I understand, without taking into account the additional costs of war in Iraq, which are mounting at the rate of about $1 billion a week.
That's right. The president's spokesman was just saying today that they're looking to a very significant increase budget request in November. You know, members of Congress are all over Iraq in the last couple of weeks, and I think the consensus they're going to bring back is that there is a great need for more resources in that country immediately.
That's also, right. Just a few months ago, looking out 10 or a dozen years, a surplus was projected.
Yes.
And what's happened with that?
Projected billion-dollar surplus. What did happen to that? By some estimates, that has dropped $10 trillion since the first Bush tax cut, which is a kind of number that no one in Washington has been dealing with. And I think that's what the election is going to be about in part.
Because at this point, the Congressional Budget Office is saying from 2004 to 2013, they're looking not at a surplus ultimately during that period, but at an overall deficit during that time of about $1.4 trillion.
That's right. Now, the numbers get even larger, Tom, when you look at things like legislation that is already in the works, tax cuts that are slated to phase out by these deficits, but that everyone knows will not.
So if they don't actually go back and pull back those tax cuts, which would be very painful and difficult politically, these deficits would be larger.
Substantially larger.
Does this presume great economic performance, medium economic performance, lousy economic performance?
The estimates are nowhere near as optimistic as they were in 2001, but the estimates do assume fairly conservative estimates on what growth will be.
So they're still looking at, I think, something like 3% a year growth, which is not great. It's not 90s style, but it's not bad at all. We'd be happy to have it the last couple of years.
We'd be very happy to have it. And, of course, the war and possibility of other terrorist attacks, all of those are wild cards when you look at the confidence of an economy that is rebounding.
You say you're expecting this to become a central factor in the presidential campaign next year. How are Republicans and Democrats greeting this news today on Capitol Hill?
Well, of course, the first to greet it were Democrats, some of whom, like the budget heads in the House and Senate, are just reminding people of what they've been saying all along from the first time the first tax cut was proposed, that with the baby boom retirement coming upon us within 5 years, we cannot afford deficits of this magnitude. And I think that's going to be part of the real question. But on the other side, what I'm not hearing that is still surprising is anyone calling for rolling back those tax cuts.
I'm reading here a Republican spokesman for the House Budget Committee, Chairman Jim Nussle, Republican of Iowa, saying that the Republicans have a blueprint for getting the budget back in balance and that it's a combination of strong economic recovery and controlling federal spending. That we're trying to do both is the message we're reading here.
Well, he's probably one of the last of the budget hawks on the Republican side. It's a declining race at this point, and I'm not sure he's even going to get past his own House leadership.
Budget hawks meaning looking to make this up by cutting federal spending.
Right. That's right. Well, remember, in conference as we speak is a $400 billion prescription drug plan that Republicans are committed to passing. There's another $30 billion in tax credits in the energy bill, which Republicans are committed to passing, plus, by some estimates, more than $800 billion in additional tax cuts that are on the way.
All of these also would deepen the deficit.
Deepen the deficit, but they're something that Republicans and business groups are committed to. So it is a really bizarre congressional situation.
Is it at the point, Gail Chadwick, where some Republicans are turning around on tax cuts, or is that just not on at all?
Jim Nussle, I think, is the best example. You've already cited him. But the area that I'm watching that I think is also interesting for Republican shifts is what members are saying when they go back to their constituents and see the impact of the loss of manufacturing jobs. People that voted for free trade coming back having second thoughts about it, or thinking hard about what the spending priorities ought to be on the economic side.
And what's the line you're drawing between the loss of manufacturing jobs and the federal budget deficit, Gail?
It's a package. The Bush scenario for growth has been tax cuts and free trade. And I think that is going to be attacked on both fronts when members go back to their constituents and see what the impact of job loss has been.
Gail Chadwick, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Gail Chadwick covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke with us earlier from Washington. We hear almost every day that Americans are too big, that this is the fast food nation. There is a smorgasbord of diet schemes and food fads to help you lose a few pounds. Atkins, The Zone, the South Beach Diet. And now, somewhere between the supermarket, the spa, and the yoga studio, there's a new fashion in food. Not eating. A growing number of Americans are putting down their forks and taking up fasting, cutting out solid foods for a day, a week, or even a month. It's a way to seize control over your own body, they say. Enthusiasts say fasting purifies the mind and body in a toxic, manic world, and it sure cuts off the pounds, at least for a while. Skeptics say the benefits are overblown and the trend speaks to a social psychology far beyond food. So have you tried fasting, or anyone in your circle of friends? Did it work? Is this just another lifestyle trend from the yoga, Pilates, massage therapy set? Or are Americans in 2003 embracing what other cultures have known for thousands of years? You can join the conversation on fasting tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Natalia Rose, a nutritional consultant and founder of the Rose Program. She organizes fasting programs for her clients and is author of Stop the Clock and Turn Back the Scale. Good evening and welcome, Natalia Rose.
Hi, Tom. Good evening. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Thanks for being with us. Also from Tel Aviv, Israel, tonight is Dr. Gabriel Cousins. He's called a fasting guru by the New York Times. He's founder of the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center in Patagonia, Arizona, and is author of Conscious Eating. Good evening and welcome, Gabriel Cousins.
Good evening. I'm very pleased to be with you.
It's great to have you. We want to learn a little bit about just what's going on here. Natalia Rose, who's fasting, and what exactly are they doing to fast? Are they just stopping eating, drinking only water? Who's doing it, and what are they doing?
Well, I'll tell you, it depends, really. You know, there are a lot of people out there taking on fast on their own, which really isn't a very bright idea. And first, I'd like to say, just briefly, it's a pleasure to be on with Dr. Cousins. I'm a big fan of yours, Dr. Cousins. And so basically, when people come to me, I can only speak from my experience. I can't tell you what everybody else is doing. I know there are a lot of people who do water fasts and, you know, the Master Cleanse and all these various different kinds of fasts. But the fasting I believe in only comes when a person, first of all, is ready to do that. And when someone comes to me initially as a client, you know, I really take the approach where I have to know everything about them, what's going on in their body, where they're coming from you know, a diet history and health perspective before I would ever dream of putting them on a fast.
And how often would a client of yours fast? Every week, every month, once a year?
Well, that's a great question. You know, you can do a mini fast where you're just literally skipping breakfast or juicing into lunch. And that's something I can recommend straight away because, you know, it's a very gentle way to give the digestive system a rest so they can get the benefits of a short fast. I do lead 4-day fasting weekends for people who have been clients of mine for a while who are relatively clean, and they're not going to go, when I use the word clean sort of loosely here. Basically that means that their bodies have had a chance to transition off of the standard American diet onto mucusless foods like steamed vegetables, raw fruits and vegetables, yams, that sort of thing.
So that's the path toward the fasting that you prescribe. Dr. Gabriel Cousins in Tel Aviv, how do you describe the benefits of fasting to people who come into your realm?
Well, the benefits of fasting really go back thousands of years. I mean, Pythagoras, for example, the great philosopher, mathematician, wouldn't even teach his students until they had done a 40-day water fast. Now, obviously, in his mind, it was clear that when your mind is toxic, you can't access, like, the higher clarity of the mind. Now, so at one level, fasting for general well-being. And to me, that brings clarity of mind, quiet mind. Most people suffer from a very active mind, and they're really not able to turn on the off button of the mind. And what happens is that people who fast, and usually I have what I call a fasting retreat on a regular basis for a 7-day cycle, which is really safe for almost everybody. We clearly do medical checks on everybody. So one of the benefits then is a clear mind, active mind, and a tremendous sense of well-being.
So, Dr. Cousins, let me ask you, are you promoting fasting primarily as a body health path or as a mental health path?
Actually, body, mental, and also spirit. And I have different kinds of fasts for people. For example, one of my clients was 5 years hospitalized in McLean in Boston. 5 years in the hospital.
In the mental health facility.
Yeah. Yes, and after just a few weeks of fasting, she was, because of the medications and so forth, it interfered with metabolism. She was very, very overweight. After 3 weeks, she first began to sense being awake. Now, she fasted, and this is not unusual, but not my usual. She fasted 68 days.
That's a long time. Dr. Cousins, isn't eating...
She became like a new person. Her self-esteem improved, her mental functioning improved, her whole body physiology improved, and she no longer had to ever go back to the hospital. She became independent, clear, and more important, she sustained herself in the fast. Because part of my work, I actually have courses that go along with some of these things, is psychological. So when a person fasts, they are often confronted with their food cravings. You know, which is greatly one of the reasons Americans are so overweight, and what some people feel about 80% of Americans are overweight, which is defined as 20 pounds beyond what you should be weighing. And we work with people to change their emotional relationship to food, because food often is a way of treating the ego. Like in the conscious eating, I say it's non-sexual sex, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's a way of feeding yourself, nurturing yourself. It's a way of taking care of feeling empty and abandoned. Now, that's not true for everybody.
But it works sometimes. Gabriel Cousins, it's a privilege to have you this evening. We know it's very late there in Tel Aviv, but you are one of the top names, most prominent names in the world of fasting, and we're grateful that you've come on with us tonight. Thanks so much for being with us. Gabriel Cousins is founder of the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center in Patagonia, Arizona. We're talking tonight about fasting, about Americans walking away from food in the new culture of radical abstinence. Has the fasting phenom hit you, your circle of friends? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Fasting, about Americans walking away from food and the new culture of radical abstinence. You can join the conversation. Are you hanging up the cheese cutter and sipping lemon water? What does the embrace of fasting say about Americans, at least some of them, in 2003? And do you buy the claims of health and serenity, or is this just a new weight loss fad? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. My guest tonight is Natalia Rose. She's joining us from New York City. She's a clinical nutritionist and founder of the Rose Program, a nutrition consulting company. She's author of Stop the Clock and Turn Back the Scale. Natalia Rose, I wish you'd take us in more concrete detail for people who are not at all familiar with the realm of fasting, of how a fast works. How long might it be? And what do people eat nothing? Do they drink something? What's the intake during a fast? Take us through what you might prescribe to a new faster, if that's the word you use.
That's a great question. I'll tell you exactly what I would recommend. First of all, as you mentioned, you can do a short fast or a long fast. And for someone just starting out who wants to just kind of get their feet wet with fasting, it'd be a great practice to just try to do freshly extracted juices. That means fresh squeezed orange juice, lemonade, or green juice, which is my juice of preference, which literally means you put green vegetables through a juicer, mm-hmm. So from romaine to chard, whatever green vegetables you like, with an apple to make it sweet and a lemon to alkalinize the blood and for a little zest. And
so it doesn't mean eating nothing, or it doesn't mean just water.
There are different kinds of fasts, and this is the one that I would prescribe or recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what happens is when you're fasting, this is the beauty of especially a juice fast, is it gives the digestive system a break. See, when we put food into the body, concentrated food, it means that our stomach has to work very hard to break that food down. You know how you feel after Thanksgiving dinner? You just want to flop on the couch.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Well, basically it's because all the energy in your body is going towards breaking down that meal. So if we can take that energy that would go towards breaking down that meal and put it into the other places that need it in the body, for example, the organs and elimination, then all of a sudden we're getting rid of obstruction in the body, we're feeling better, we don't have this backlog of meals in our body to deal with. So that's why fasting is so important. It gives the digestive system a break.
And
that's what it's about.
And it's not just about low-calorie intake. From everything I'm reading here, and we caught your name in the New York Times over the weekend, there's a great focus on toxins in the body. And what's the relationship that you draw between toxins and fasting? What's the interaction?
Okay. Basically, toxins is anything that your body can't break down. That can be anything from a cooked fat to pollution. Anything the body cannot break down and completely eliminate is a toxin in the body.
And what does fasting have to do with those?
This is what's so beautiful about fasting. Basically, fasting enables your body, it frees up all that energy we talked about, to go towards, the body can now spend time cleaning out the toxins from the organs and send them into the eliminative organs. The eliminative organs are the kidneys, the lungs, the skin is the largest organ, of course, that we know, and the colon. The most important eliminative organ is the colon.
Mm.
And so basically everything gets sent to the eliminative organ so the body can then get rid of it. It's like a cleaning house, if you will.
Natalia Rose, I want to ask you, why do most of your clients come to you? Dr. Cousins was talking about the mind, the body, the soul. On the other hand, we read that in the midst of 4-day fasts, you'll take your clients on trips to fancy clothing stores to see the dresses or clothes they may fit into on the other side of the fast. Is this about mind, body, and soul, or is this the new Atkins diet, the new diet fad?
No, here's the thing, Tom. This is what's so great about this is that you have to take people at their point of need. People that are going to see Dr. Cousins they're going to Arizona. They want that peaceful retreat.
Mm-hmm.
The people generally, well, I would say 70% of the people that come to me are Upper East Side, sort of the elite New Yorkers who basically care first and foremost about how they look. They're in society, they're models, they're media joins, whatever the case may be. But they're basically all about their look. So they come to me initially for that. And so I keep them entertained while they're cleansing. And then they see how great they feel. Suddenly their spirits are lifted, their head is clear, everything's functioning better. And then you can start tapping into the more spiritual aspects of all of this, which is ultimately where you want to go on the path.
So come for looks, stay for the feeling, and meanwhile, the Sub-Zero is empty back in the fancy flat. Natalia Rose, you want to hear more, but please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Dr. David Katz. He's joining us tonight from New Haven, Connecticut. He's director of the Yale Prevention Research Center at the Yale School of Medicine and author of The Way to Eat. Good evening and welcome, Dr. David Katz.
Good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We are reading these days and hearing tonight some pretty muscular claims for fasting, that fasting frees the body up to, obviously, it will lose some weight, at least in the short run, but also it will be purged of all kinds of bad stuff. What's your view of fasting, Dr. Katz? Is it a useful habit? Is it a healthful habit? Is it safe?
It depends who's doing it and what they're doing it for, Tom. Certainly, brief fasts can be safe for healthy people. And there is a time-honored tradition, Dr. Cousins alluded to this, particularly in Eastern religions, to essentially use a fast to help concentrate the mind. But if we're talking about an approach to nutritional health, if we're talking about something that might be a benefit to a population struggling with epidemic obesity, this is clearly not the way. This is not the solution for a nation that is facing an obesity crisis.
And why not?
Well, for many reasons. Perhaps foremost among them is the fact that my gravest concern about our obesity epidemic is our children. Children growing up in the United States today will suffer more chronic disease and premature death because of the way they eat and the attendant obesity than from exposure to tobacco, drugs, and alcohol combined. Frankly, there are an awful lot of sexy trends that people tap into for appearance and for weight control, but most of them, I think, ignore our responsibility as members of families. Really, adults need to be setting a good example for children.
And children don't or shouldn't fast?
Well, I don't hear anybody talking about engaging children in fasting, but certainly that would not be a helpful practice.
So you're describing this as kind of the, I don't know, some titillation for the affluent, but saying mainstream America won't find a solution here and it's a diversion?
Well, that's my feeling, frankly, about all of the popular fad diets. And to the extent that we consider fasting an approach to weight control, yes, it's not only a diversion, but a dangerous distraction, because until the public rallies around the challenge of eating well every day in a manner that can be shared in families and that can be shared with children, and that isn't only for elite Upper East Side New Yorkers, the obesity epidemic that represents an enormous public health toll will continue to worsen.
And what about the specific claims here that are quite generally made during fasting that the body is freed up to work on an array of toxins and get them out and leave the fasting person better off?
Right. Well, with all due respect to Ms. Rose, those are some lectures I must have missed in medical school. I do currently direct an integrative medicine center where I work side by side with naturopathic physicians, and the issue of detoxifying the body comes up a lot. But in my opinion, and again, with all due respect to other guests, the idea that the body needs to fast in order to cleanse itself is a little bit like the idea that you need to run your car with no gasoline in the tank in order for it to cleanse itself. Our digestive system is specifically designed to break down food and to provide nutrients into the bloodstream that help run this magnificent machine. And in fact, in patients who are sick and in the hospital, we actually see a very dangerous proliferation of toxins in the body when they can't eat for an extended period of time.
Why would that happen?
Well, because the cells that line the intestine derive nutrients directly from food. They don't get it from the bloodstream because they have direct exposure to the nutrients. When they're not fed, they start to atrophy. That creates leakages in the intestine that actually allows bacteria in the intestine to enter into the bloodstream. So there are many dangerous complications of not providing nutrients over an extended period of time. A brief fast, again, we all fast from dinner yesterday until breakfast tomorrow, But extended fasts are quite harmful, and in fact, we struggle often with hospitalized patients.
Natalia Rose, let me turn to you for a moment. What do you make of that kind of challenge to some of the precepts of the fasting community? Dr. Katz is saying short fast, okay, but longer could actually be dangerous. Do you see that borne out?
Well, you know, like I said before, I don't advocate a long-term fast for people in general because it is unnecessary because you can cleanse and detoxify and just by creating a cleaner diet.
How do you define long term, Natalia?
Okay, well, I think beyond 6 days would be a long term fast.
Sounds very long to me.
But one thing I'd like to point out is that these patients that Dr. Katz is describing who are suffering from the toxicity that's going into their system and atrophying their muscles or their limbs, I think that is evidence to the fact that so much is loosened up during the fast. And to add to this, I also am a strong advocate of cleansing the colon during a fast because there is so much toxicity loosened up that can be dangerous. So this isn't sort of, carte blanche for people to go out and say, okay, I'm going to try this, I want to fast. That's really not a smart idea. The message is, clean your diet first, get the mucus-forming foods out of your diet, lessen the animal products, increase the fresh raw fruits and vegetables, the steamed vegetables, and let your body start to clean natural, transition yourself. If you want to dabble in fasting, do so with the consciousness that you're going to loosen this stuff up, and if you don't have a way of eliminating it, either with colon cleansing or by, throwing some food in there periodically to help, to help eliminate the toxins that you build up, it can be dangerous.
And you've got a lot of people who are signing on for this. They're saying, yeah, that looks like a great idea.
Yeah, it is a great idea if it's done right, but it's not something you want to just do with abandon and not. You have to pay attention to the rules of it because. And how you break the fast is critical as well. Throwing fruit into a man who's 40 pounds overweight after a 4-day fast, that could be very damaging.
What an interesting thing. We hear almost I feel a kind of natural inevitability in this fasting talk out of so many of the trends we've seen in foods and consumption. And dieting and health patterns over recent years, and yet there's the cautionary note from the health side here. I want to invite our callers in. Mike is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. With all due respect, I broke out laughing when the doctor said he missed those lectures in medical school. Well, of course you did, doctor, because they're not in medical school. But I've fasted for 35 years.
How often? And, how often, Mike?
Well, there was a period of time in the 70s and 80s when I would fast once a year for several weeks.
Okay.
I've done some very long fasts. I've been through some periods in my life when I fasted 1 or 2 days a week automatically. I've done many 3-day and 7-day fasts.
Why do you do it, and what's the result of it from your observation, Mike?
The results I consider absolutely superlative. I'm nearly 50 years old, and I believe I have the blood pressure of someone in their teens. I never get sick and work a 7-day-a-week job, day in, day out. I can outwork people half my age.
Can you work when you're fasting, Mike?
You can in the beginning. I don't really recommend that. I want to mention there's so many things that came up in this conversation that I want to respond to. First of all, I have several children.
Mm-hmm.
These children are vegans.
Mm-hmm.
That whenever they get a runny nose, we give them juice the next day, and the runny nose disappears. And one is 7 years old, and he's had only a few runny noses in his life.
You mean you give them juice the next day? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And the runny nose goes away. And these kids, everyone we know has kids with ear infection after ear infection. Our kids have had none of this.
Mike, stand by. I want to bring Dr. David Katz into our conversation right here. David Katz here. You can hear it just as we do, a real enthusiast for fasting who feels that he's done it for 35 years and it's really worked for him.
Right, right. Well, first of all, the comment about those lectures not being in medical school, it is important to invoke evidence. And very often, if something is important for human health, it's been studied, it is discussed in medical school, but often it's not.
I can respond to that.
Well,
hang on
a
second,
continue,
Mike.
What I'd like to point out in particular here is my focus really is on health for the population. Mm-hmm. And there is a danger in testimonials. You're offering a testimonial about your family. I could do the same. I don't fast very often, and certainly there's an occasion where I may go for a day without eating, but I don't consider that part of my plan. What I do is eat well every day. I have 5 children. My children are very healthy. My children are growing up with healthy eating habits because that's what's practiced in our home. They don't get sick.
So we can swap testimonials,
exactly.
But that doesn't prove the case.
It basically just winds up being a matter of who told the last testimonial.
Mike, let me ask you this, if I may. Why did you begin fasting, and how do you decide how long to fast when you do it now?
Can I answer that and still respond to the point you just
okay,
made?
Okay, we'll get you that. Yeah, we'll give you that.
Okay. I started fasting as a result of getting into yoga as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up a book by, actually, if your man from Israel was on, he would probably know the author of this book, a fellow named Victoris Kolbinskis.
Oh, yeah, sure. A famous book, The Miracle of Fasting. Is that the one?
No, it's Survival into the 21st Century.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's got a beautiful Peter Max cover on it, and it was kind of a cult book, which incidentally leads into my response point. I've hung out at gatherings of people who regularly fast. I know a lot of people who regularly fast. None of them, doctor, has ever participated in a medical study. I submit to you there's no evidence because people like me never get studied. You don't put out a call saying, we want to contact all the people who fast so we can check them out. You just never do it.
Mike, we've got it, and we know the kind of homeopathic critique of traditional medicine. David Katz, what about it? We do read laboratory tests showing that low-calorie diets in rats, as I recall, may lead to greater longevity. Is a low-calorie diet something that already makes your scientifically proven plus list here, or is fasting an extension of that?
Yeah, and you know, frankly, Tom, if what we're talking about is practicing portion control and using fasting as part of that formula. In fact, yes, restricting calorie intake over time is beneficial, particularly in a society where so many people take in an excess of calories. So for people like Mike who use fasting intermittently, have made it a part of their life, combine it with the practice of veganism in his family, strict adherence to a plant-based diet, there are many healthful elements there. And I suspect it's all of those elements in the aggregate that contribute to the health of his family, and I certainly hope that continues. But again, my concern is that for the average person in this country, and I'm a professor of public health as well as medicine, the average person is going to struggle to make intermittent fasting a part of their life, and I think would be far better served by learning how to choose helpful foods every day.
David Katz, please stand by. Natalia Rose will be right back. We're talking about fasting and Americans walking away from food. You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this program comes from...
Oh, what about fasting and Americans walking away from food, the new culture of radical abstinence? Have you tried fasting? Why? And what did it do for you? Are Americans catching on here to what other cultures have known for eons? Or is it something else? What are Americans really pursuing when they fast? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight from New York City, Natalia Rose. She is clinical nutritionist and founder of the Rose Program, a nutrition consulting company. She has lots of clients who fast. From New Haven, Connecticut, Dr. David Katz, director of the Yale Prevention Research Center at the Yale School of Medicine. And now from West Hartford, Connecticut, Margot Main. She's a clinical psychologist specializing in eating disorders and consulting director of eating disorders at the Institute of Living in Hartford, Connecticut. She's author of Body Wars, Making Peace with Women's Bodies. Good evening and welcome, Margot Main.
Good evening. Nice to join you folks.
Thanks so much for joining us. Margot Main, you know how much time Americans spend thinking about food and on ways in many sectors to eat less of it. What do you make of this new subculture of fasting? What does this grow out of? Where's it headed?
Well, I think this is trickle-down body obsessions. when you look at what Hollywood does, sooner or later it trickles down to the rest of us. And it hasn't trickled down to the masses yet. It's, you know, in the upper middle classes right now, but it is going to trickle all the way down.
But you say body obsession, so you mean primarily with that kind of gaunt look that fasting could produce?
I think that a lot of it is around body image. There are quite a few people who are clear that, as Natalia Rose said earlier, that their motivation initially is that they want to lose weight. They want to get that Hollywood body. So that's a big element in this group. I think there are others who are attracted to fasting because they see it as a way to institute some control over their lives at a time when everything else in our environment is pretty overwhelming. When you think of our economy, when you think of the war in Iraq, when you think of all those things.
So this is something they can take control of. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, there's other ways to take control that don't have to do with doing extreme things to your body. And if you really are concerned about the world, fasting is not necessarily the most powerful way to do it. Certainly, there are people and groups who have done political and religious and spiritual fasts for good reasons. You know, Gandhi comes to mind, Dick Gregory, mm-hmm. Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. Joan of Arc, all kinds of people from all eras. There are good reasons to fast, but I do
But
not
those were all pushing, well, the pushing a political platform,
right.
And maybe more than that in Gandhi's case, he recommended it as a regular thing. But you're looking at this, I don't know, do I hear you describing this as a kind of eating disorder, or
yeah.
do you,
There is, it's not recognized yet, technically, but in the clinical world where people deal with a wide range of eating disorders, there is a term that's been developed over the last several years called orthorexia. And orthorexia means trying to eat too correctly, becoming obsessed with healthy eating. And people who do this transfer their feelings of anxiety about other issues onto what they're going to eat. So they may have lots of other concerns in their lives, but what they worry about and what they act on is around their dietary intake.
But so there is, of course, a long, long, even ancient tradition of fasting in cultures that didn't have the complex of tensions and issues and stresses that the contemporary Americans have. Isn't
yeah.
it possible for fasters to look to that legacy as their inspiration, as their guiding light?
I certainly think there's a number of people today who are fasting who are in that ilk. I don't think that's the average person today who's drawn to fasting, however. And I don't think those are the people that the articles about fasting reflect. I think that there is the old school. There are the people who will do this for truly spiritual reasons and health reasons. But I do think the current trend and attraction to it is not as psychologically healthy.
Natalia Rose, what do you think of that? You see the people who come in and who are eager to do it. You're describing them as going away euphoric. Here we've got a social psychologist saying, I don't know if this is all to the good. What do you make of it?
Well, I think there are a lot of terms you can throw out there, like what was the term you used? Ortho-anorexia.
Orthorexia, yeah.
Orthorexia. And there are a lot of different medical and psychological terms you can use to describe different diseases that we have. And we're suffering from all these diseases in this country because people aren't balanced. Their bodies are completely out of balance. And there's nothing that brings the body back into harmony like giving the body a break to put itself on what I believe is nature's operating table. And no better healing can take place, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical, than what happens when you clear the obstructions from the body. And counting calories and fat grams and making sure your BMI is a certain number and your weight is a certain number mm-hmm. isn't working, and it's not making people well. We're getting sicker. Women have more trouble with menopause than anywhere else in the world, girls with menstruation, men with cholesterol, and the infinite number of diseases we're suffering from in this country, obesity just being one of them, and a leading cause of the others, I might add. But really, it's about listening to the body. When children are sick, they naturally lose their appetite. They stop eating.
animals in nature stop eating. We eat too much. There's such a compounding sort of effect happening in the body when we have meal after meal. We eat about 5 meals a day, the average American. We're told to eat 5 meals a day, which is positively ludicrous. Our body can't deal with that much. When you put a, what I call a miscombined meal into the body, a sort of a protein food with a starch food, so say, for example, the average sandwich, the body spends, the stomach, it takes about 8 hours in the stomach, just that combination. So a few hours later, you put a snack in there that takes another 5 hours in the stomach, and all of a sudden you have this backup happening.
It's so interesting. We hear the kind of natural appeal in this, and I imagine almost all listeners would say, that makes sense, and yet we've got these caution flags from our doctor this evening and our social psychologist. What a fascinating mix of threads here. I want to invite another caller in. Paul's calling from New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, I also go back to like 68, I believe, and the first time I did a 5.5-day fast. Mm. Over the years, I've done many, many types of fasts for a number of purposes. But originally, I was attracted because of Jesus and his curiosity about his 40-day fast and what that rendered his consciousness.
And the biblical story, right?
And like in his situation, there's references to manna. When the tribes were traveling, and they said, what did they eat? The sacred bread. And I found it very interesting that in Hawaii, manna is a word used for the energy of the earth, the life force energy, like prana, which is breath. And there's many forms of subtle energy that we can sustain our spiritual well-being with.
Paul, are you suggesting that you've pursued fasting primarily as a spiritual tool or means?
But cleansing also. The one point is very important. They talked about cleansing the colon.
Mm-hmm.
One important thing, I've done the longest fast I've done is 81 days.
Good Lord.
I've done 30. Yeah, and
was that for a spiritual purpose or for political purpose? Or
I've done it for all sorts of political, health, many purposes.
Mm-hmm.
That was particularly because I was, I like Gandhi, feel the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the speakers spoke of it, that mm-hmm. they were to listen to our body is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we listen to our body and ups and downs and demands of sugar and various addictions that we get,
mm-hmm.
demands that are put to us by our bodies that we and our life can be taken up by that. So when you eliminate that and you simplify your diet, when you get down to a more elemental, more easily assimilated diet of where your nutrition can be taken into the bloodstream easily, like in liquid form, basic sugars,
mm-hmm.
basic minerals, the essential.
Then you feel a kind of liberation, as I hear you describe it.
Exactly, it's most definitely true, and if you look at it in terms of providing all the nutrients, but in a like almost a high octane form, some way that's easily taken in without the extra fats, you don't have to break the fast down sugars. All those, you find yourself having a more easy state of mind.
Paul, let us pick that up, and I'm gonna put it to each of our guests, and I thank you for your call. But David Katz, to you first. There's a common theme among people fasting here and enthusiasts for fasting. Talk about increased energy and even a kind of euphoria. How do you interpret those sensations?
You know, Tom, listening to the comments, I can't help but think of the description someone using mind-altering drugs would give. Certainly cocaine induces a feeling of euphoria and boosts energy. It doesn't mean it's good for you. So I don't doubt there are certain feelings associated with a fast that are empowering.
Why would those take place? Have you studied that chemistry at all? Is there a clear answer as to why someone might feel in a heightened state of serenity or energy?
Well, it's rather complicated, but almost anything that affects blood flow, blood pressure, and certainly fasting can do that. Changes the flow of blood into the brain, has a tendency to affect the sensorium, that sense of alertness and consciousness. And there is an energizing effect of taking charge and essentially taking yourself out of your usual routine.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't anything terribly surprising about that. But again, many practices that have that effect are distinctly not helpful. And there, it certainly is not indicative that fasting is helpful for most people. I'd also point out that some of the comments being tossed around tonight are false and misleading. It certainly doesn't take food anything like 8 hours to exit the stomach unless there's something seriously wrong with the gastrointestinal system. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if I may just invoke another concept here, the anthropologists tell us a lot about what our ancestral diet was like, and we were hunter-gatherers, and gatherers basically eat on the go. And one need look no further than many animal species to see that the basic gastrointestinal system of mammals, for the most part, is pretty well designed to take in small amount of foods frequently. I think that serves us well. It regulates insulin level. It's good for weight control. It controls appetite. In fact, if one goes without eating for an extended period of time, the typical reaction, and again, you know, the people we're hearing from tonight obviously are devotees of fasting and don't represent the masses, but the typical reaction after you deprive yourself is to binge. And typically that results then in a loss of control, excess calorie intake. So there's a danger here, too, in evoking a lack of control in one's relationship with eating, as opposed to establishing a balanced, healthful relationship every day.
And Margot May, let me put it to you. Our caller and others have spoken to the sense of liberation, energy, euphoria. What do you make of that? And is that a big driving force here, or do you still pull it back to body image?
Oh, I think the euphoria that people experience once they start this process is very real, and it's an addictive hook. It can make people want to go back to that feeling, and it is, as Dr. Katz mentioned, it's sort of like a drug in that other things fade away, and that feeling of being free and focused is very powerful. But I want to also follow up on the issue of what happens to some people who go on these fasts. Some of them will end up with more serious problems. Starvation, which fasting often is, depending how a person does it, will prompt a person to binge later when they begin to eat, unless they're really guided well by a program, and also in an okay place psychologically. So one of the things that I'm afraid of with this increased emphasis on the fasting diets is that we will end up with a number of people who had other factors predisposing them for eating disorders who all of a sudden get thrown into a very severe eating disorder, which, as you know, can be life-threatening.
So I guess I'm hearing tonight that there's a lot of confrontation in views here, but one thing is maybe this isn't a nationwide public health solution. Maybe in a controlled setting, if it's done very sensibly, it could be a good thing, but it's not the answer to American obesity. I guess, Natalia Rose, your clients aren't looking for a national solution. They're looking for a personal weekend.
Well, yes and no. You know, a great majority of my clients is that sort of affluent set. However, I also see the blue collar and the, you know, the very middle class Americans come to me. So it's it really runs the gamut. But I will tell you, when people are hitting walls, particularly, you know, people who have lived on the standard American diet for a long time, they start this kind of a cleansing, and they feel liberated not only by the fact that they, you know, aren't eating such complex foods, but because, you know, they do feel this euphoria that comes.
We've got it, Natalia Rose, and with that, we're out of time. Natalia Rose, David Katz, Margot Main, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from